We have an unusually large studio audience, I think because word got out to film students that some of them are cutting classes to be here today, so we won't show you on camera and keep you out of trouble. My guest tonight is the French filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard, and he is invariably called an enfant terrible, a genius of film. And in his picture, Breathless, they always say that it changed the grammar of films. Critics always say that. What they seem to mean by that is that he broke all the accepted rules of movie making. Shots didn't match. Film had what are known as jump cuts. There would be fragmented dialogue. Shots taken with a handheld camera that moved occasionally. And yet the result was a very moving experience for moviegoers, filmgoers. And I guess a milepost in the technique of filmmaking, the art of filmmaking. That year was 1959. Since then, Godard has had a prodigious outpouring of unusual, outstanding movies. His new film this year is called Every Man for Himself, and it's still another movie, different from any of his other films, and shows the rapid turnover of style which his fans have come really to associate with. Methods of communication of my guest. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome, please, a brilliant filmmaker, Jean-Luc Godard. Mr. Godard, the word comeback has been used about this film. By that, I guess they mean it may be the first, what you might call, commercial feature that you've done in some time. Does that word comeback offend you, or in any way? Well, you see it that way?
In a sense, because I never went away. Maybe I was pushed away, and to me, I'd rather say, well, the reverse of comeback. Well, what is it? Come forth? Or go forth?
Or continue?
Just continue going on, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it isn't in your sense a return to something. The critics, in talking about this, what I've read of the current film, see it as full of despair. It's a word that's come up in 4 out of 5 reviews. Pessimism. Do you see that?
Whose critic were they? I think, were they men or women?
Ah. I never notice when I read.
I think they were mainly men because they identify, well, there is 2 girls, mainly 2 male, yeah. 2 female characters and 1 male character. And I think the men identify more with the men. And because of that, they say it's full of despair. But since there is a majority of the 2 women, which are absolutely no, there is no despair in their moves, and I think it's unfair to the movie. Mm-hmm. But I may find an explanation. It's because there is, for the character and for myself as a director of the movie, there was no feeling of complaining about something. Mm-hmm. It was not to complain about something, the world, the business, the money, the war in the Middle East, anything. Yeah. There was no complaining in this movie. And because of that, you see real motivation without nothing surrounding it. I mean, motivations in reality. And maybe it's tough to see because you are not used to see that. And so you think there must be some despair or something just because it's tough.
Because the characters aren't complaining, they must have given up.
They're just coping with it. It's just coping with reality, but no complaining about nothing.
There is a feeling, it's interesting that you said, were they men or women, the critics? The women in the film, which I saw, seem to cope, to use your word, better than the men, certainly. The prostitute is resigned to what she does, or she's distanced from it in some way.
I mean, it's hard work, like any kind of work today. Mm-hmm. I mean, even having just a small conversation, a piece about a movie, with such light and such ceremony. I mean, it's kind of hard. It's difficult to be casual and normal. Yeah. And TV is hard. I don't know for the audience, but... So the girls are more casual, yes. And I think women are more natural today than men.
More natural?
Yeah.
Better adjusted, able to endure life better?
I think they have better ideas.
Yeah. Do you, what do they mean when they say you seem more sympathetic to the women in the films?
No, not that. I mean, the male character is my name, and his first name, Paul, is my father's name. Mm-hmm. But I don't, well, identify a bit with it, and he's a TV character, he's a TV producer, I'm a movie producer, so. But I think it's more like a social status. So it was honest for me to give my name in some place of the movie, whether an hotel or whether a character or whether a car, I don't know. Yeah. But the moves and the motivation of the two women, which were two different kind of moves, or maybe the same moves, but two different kind of speed. And the problem with the man, he has no speed. One of the women is going too fast, the other one is going too slow, and the man is just not moving. And yes. And then maybe this is the despair. Uh-huh. But there is direction with the two other ones. And it's more, and to me, there is more autobiography, you say, mm-hmm. in the two women character. I never hesitate in none of my movies, even in the first one with Jean Seberg. She was an American girl. I gave her my lines. And very often I have problem with the actor because they are obliged to say my lines, not Shakespeare line, not mm-hmm. an objective line, but my lines. And very often, because it is woman, they object, because they feel... But I think I'm just giving the lines to the actor when I think it's right, whether it is a man and or a woman.
What do you do with the actress who says, but a woman wouldn't say that?
Well, now I think maybe if we have a good relationship, maybe a difficult one, but a good, maybe I listen a little more, and maybe I think that my lines are not so good, but maybe there is good enough, and, well, let's work it more, let's study it, and maybe we'll discover something.
So you're not the sort of director who would say, this woman would say it, or
no,
wash up
no,
and get out?
No, for example, I always try that, at least, for example, I wanted because in the call girl business, very often the girl names are not theirs. They're afraid to give their real names. Mm-hmm. So I ask Isabel, do you accept to give your real names, first name Isabel? And the way she's saying it, because it's a real name, we understand it's a real name. She's not like the other girl saying, my name is Marilyn, or Natasha or Claudia, you know, those kind of fancy names. Mm-hmm.
Shawanda.
Yeah, I mean.
There's another thing I'd like to, that seems to be always said about you, I'd like to hear you talk about, and that is that they always talk about distance, that you keep your characters emotionally distanced, or you keep the audience at a distance and intentionally, not too close, not too emotionally.
I think much less now. I think I'm coming more closer now. Less distance.
Really?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And maybe if this picture were fairly successful, I think it's because of that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, I mean, to look at things, you have to go very far to be, well, to have the possibility of taking a look of it. If you go too close, like in advertising, I mean, you are so close to the products, you don't see anymore. That's why you have to name it, because you don't see nothing. So mm-hmm. you just name it. But if you, I mean, sometimes you have to go, even in a love affair, sometimes you have, well, to put some distance to discover the love again. I think in making a movie which has to do with the distance, the way the distance the camera has to be from what you are, yes. Maybe I was too close in the beginning, then I went too far, and now it's more, there is more justice.
Yeah. Sometimes in the middle of a scene, you will cut completely elsewhere to some other place, but the voice keeps going. There's an example in this film where during an intimate scene, you suddenly cut to the people on the street, but the scene, you keep hearing the scene, but you're seeing something completely different, shoppers, people passing, and then back.
But to me there is no real difference between image and sound, they are just tools. And sometimes, I mean, as I say, even if it looks a paradox, you have to listen to the image and to look at the sound, if I may say so, and to use it more like in the music. Mm-hmm. Or in the painting. That's funny, because in movies you ask to movies a certain amount of things which you never ask to poetry or to paintings or to music. I wonder why.
I don't know, but it has to do with something that a reaction people have to your films. They'll say, I liked it, but I didn't really enjoy it, or I knew I was seeing something good, but I didn't understand it.
I wish it could be, but, I mean, we live in a difficult society. Mm-hmm. I wish it could be, and I will try harder, because... But it's not so easy. I mean, the audience has to do something to... I mean, very often, just take... I mean, an ordinary people working in, in an office or something, he's going... or someone who's selling, let's say... hamburger. Mm-hmm. Well, from what you know, we know about hamburger, it's not very good. Well, when he's going to a movie, whether to see a movie of me or one by Steve McQueen, he's asking the best. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't relate. He's asking to the fact that 8 hours a day he's delivering a really awful piece of products. And so why Steve McQueen or me shouldn't do the same? Why not? And the audience should think. They have a responsibility in the making of movies, or much more a responsibility in the making of TV, because they are making the TV. I remember a quote from CBS head saying, he was laughing because he said, people think we are producing programs. Well, only in second. First, we are producing viewers.
Mm-hmm. Producing viewers.
Producing, yeah, téléspectateurs.
Yeah. You were speaking about speed earlier. We have a clip from A Man for Himself, and it's a controversial point in this present film, because you use slow motion in a way I find unusual.
And I'm glad.
Yeah. certainly not a cliche. And
I'm glad, because it was very difficult, and I don't think I reached really always. Sometimes it's very difficult.
Well, here's an example of it. This isn't typical of the movie in the sense that it's not this way all the way through, but here and there this happens. If you roll that, we'll have a look at what.
Sans idée à faire vous-même. Tu... Tiens, j'ai une idée.
Toi, t'as une idée?
Ouais, tu vas bien voir.
Téléphoner pour l'appartement.
s'est passé?
On a envie de se toucher, mais on n'y arrive qu'en se tapant l'un sur l'autre.
Vous êtes cinglé? Dis, elle a vraiment l'air d'avoir mal.
Elle a la tête dure. C'est une fille de banquier. Je vais faire un tour.
How would you?
How would it have been any different if you had just decided to have that at the normal speed?
Well, this is precisely the point. I did it when at the normal speed it was not possible to see things or at least indicate a possibility which is not completely reached here, mm-hmm. That there is something different to be seen. For example, they were fighting together, yeah. But you had to indicate they were still in love together. And if you slow down, and with an analysis projector or in the editing table, but slowing down not so the machine is stopped and then you forget, to slow it down just to have the time to have a look. To take your time to look at what you are doing. And then you discover that these movements, it can be whether a jab or whether a caress. Mm-hmm. And then, well, probably I was not capable enough of doing it completely. The shot is too long, maybe should be a change of angles and different timing. So, but I kept it that way because it was an indication. They want to love each other, but the only way they want to love each other, the only possibility is by is touching themselves through jabs. And you indicate the audience there is a possibility, mm-hmm. that moves are changed, and you don't. So you use it.
Yeah. Yes, what would have been a very violent motion is sentimental somewhat this
yeah.
way. And more,
if,
it's a
if
different
not,
movement.
If it was. Whether it would be too sentimental or whether too violent.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be both together.
It's interesting that you're not entirely happy with the results. That you're not
on
sure
this
that
one or not. Some other time, yes. On this one, no. Uh-huh. No.
Yeah.
But then you have to think it before. It was only because I was working in the movie and the techniques in movie is very conservative. They don't want to link it with video. Or the video people don't want to be linked with movie people. Mm-hmm. And then I thought of it later and not before the shooting. And that's why it's still awkward, you see.
Uh-huh.
And it looks a bit like a gadget. I mean, it's like in a
gimmick.
Yeah, a gimmick, like in a Sylvester Stallone movie or things like that.
Could you clear up something that's a mystery to a lot of Americans? Jerry Lewis, as much as he's admired as a comedian, an awful lot of Americans are in the dark as to why he is so almost sanctified by Europeans, particularly the French, as a filmmaker. Whole issues of Cahiers du Cinéma will talk about
He was at a time, not all. Well, but we discovered a great... quite a lot of many people in the motion. We said that Hitchcock was a great movie maker. We said that, for example, I was criticized by the fact that I said that a recent Al Ashby movie was not at all done by Al Ashby, but by the Lorimer company or even by the bankers of Lorimer.
Al Ashby, you said
Al Ashby.
The movie was made by bankers
But those people should understand that it's because of us that they have their name credited above the title. If at a time, which was 25 years ago, for making our own survival and to try to make the movie we wanted to make, we needed the help of some other people. We needed exterior help. We took it where it was possible. We said Hawks is better than this one. Oakes is a great novelist, as good as Faulkner.
Howard
Hitchcock
Hawks.
Howard Hawks, we said Hitchcock is a great novelist, as good as Dostoevsky. But it was a help from us. And then we existed through them, too. And we give them back credits, because now you can see a Howard Hawks picture. Before us, it was not. It was a Selznick picture or a Zanuck picture.
By us, do you mean when you were a critic, film critic?
Yeah, and, but yeah. Which I still am.
Yeah, sure.
And Jerry Lewis, I think, is one... I've seen his last movie, Hardly Working, which is, I think, not appeared here. And to me, he's a great director. He's more a painter, maybe, than a director. He probably doesn't even know. But he's a great, to me, first, he's a continuator of the Harry Langdon and Buster Keaton and Chaplin tradition. He's working with space. He's not tracking like all those so-called modern movie maker and making fancy with the camera. He's just interested in framing. He's a very good framer, like great painters. He has a lot of sense of geometry. To be a comic, you have to be very capable in geometry. Mm-hmm. And today, I mean, his last picture, Hardly Working, even the title is very honest. It's difficult to make a good picture.
Yeah.
And he knows. And I think he should be supported, and I'm one of his supporters.
Mm. But most people don't go to movies to see framing and technical ingenuity.
Yeah, but
they want to laugh or be entertained.
Yeah, but they receive picture through that.
Yeah. Do you also find him funny?
Very, very. Yeah. Very. If not, no. I think it's very funny. Even when it's not funny, it's more funny. Because it's not funny.
Well, I know he thrives on and enjoys the praise that he gets abroad. And it's somewhat mystifying to America, although he's, of course, been a huge success here, to find intellectuals praising him in European
magazines. I think he has a great idea for his last movie. He was obliged to try to do it in Sweden. I don't know if he succeeded. It was the day, the title is The Day the clown cried, and it's a picture about in a Nazi concentration camp. They were using a clown to make the baby laugh when they were going in the gas chamber. I think it's a beautiful idea.
Yes, you're referring to a film that I think has, it's never been released in this country.
It has not even been produced up to now. He has problem.
Oh, it's not finished?
No, it's not finished.
Uh-huh.
He was obliged to go... in exile. I mean, always, it's a good sign when good people go in exile from their country, it means there is something good in them.
It's a good sign, isn't
it? It's a good sign, yes.
Yeah. Say, who does the subtitles for a film of yours? How does that get done?
This one were very carefully taken care of. They were done by Charles Bukowski, the American novelist, which is not very well known in America.
That's right.
Yeah. And some of the sequence in the picture are coming from Charles Bukowski's short novels. And they were worked again by two friends, which are Babet Chaudet and Jean-Pierre Gorin, who are French movie maker who lived here. So I think the subtitles, for once, are quite good. Yeah.
This is just an aside, but I just wondered how important spelling is to you, because there's one moment when there's only one word in the subtitle and it's spelled wrong. Despair is spelled D-I-S in the...
Well, that's...
I thought maybe it was a pun or something.
I don't like subtitles very much. I wish sometimes there would be just a presentation, an introduction. For example, I wish someone like Norman Mailer would like my movie and would feel he'd like to introduce it to the American audience.
Right there on the screen.
Or a presentation, and maybe after a subtitle or a dub version, but first a presentation, an introduction. Let me introduce, and he'll speak and comment the way he wants.
On film, on the screen?
Ooh, on film, on screen, yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a third way to do it, which I'll try to experiment on one of those.
Don't feel bad about spelling. Makarova is spelled wrong in a headline in the Times today, so apparently spelling doesn't count. You referred to some recent film as being awful because it was black and white.
No.
Maybe I
Maybe it was because it was bad, awful black and white.
Oh, awful black and white. You're not opposed to making a black and white film these days, clearly.
I think next Martin Scorsese picture, which is in black and white, will be very beautiful.
I think maybe you thought...
A Woody Allen
picture? It could have been Woody Allen that Manhattan...
Yeah, I think it's not a good black and white.
You'd rather have seen, say, was it, could it have been Manhattan in color? You think it would have added something rather than...
No, I think... I wonder why he want black and white. I think it's more a literary idea than a need, a painting idea, needing really black and white for painting reason.
Yeah.
So it's more, a gimmick.
There are no scripts for your movies.
Yeah, there are, but not the way you are doing it here.
I mean, the actors don't receive a script in the mail, a full script before.
This is my next two scripts, and you see that.
I barely see those. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I... But there are only three words per page.
No, it's a beginning. I'm beginning to work, you see.
Oh, yes. It's fascinating. Well, I bet I could get a pretty penny for these.
Give it back to
me. You'd be out of work for 2 years if I just pocketed those. Sir Godard, are you game for another session like this? Because there's so many more things that I want to get to with you, and we've run out of time.
Okay.
We'll see you encore une fois.
Merci.
Jean-Luc Godard. Thank you.